What's up, everybody? We've got another banger series that we are putting together. This one on the great woman of history, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. And I don't even say that fully sarcastically, because really just the history here is awesome and it's a really fun story to tell. If you want the full thing, become a patron at patreon.com/workstoppage, because it's the only way that we actually get the money to actually put these episodes together and do the whole show. And so we greatly appreciate it when you support us. Otherwise, I hope that you enjoy this preview, and solidarity forever.
So folks are coming off listening to our recent 8-part series that we did on the history of women in the U.S. labor movement. One thing you may have noticed in one of the earlier episodes when we talked about one of the, you know, big epochal strikes in U.S. history, the Bread and Roses strike in Lawrence, Massachusetts in 1911, that we didn't really talk very much about one of the central figures of that strike, one of the biggest organizers of the strike. At that time, IWW organizer Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. And part of that is because the more I read about Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, the more I was like, there is too much cool shit in her life to squeeze into a couple of like asides in this much broader series.
Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, you smoke too different.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, one of the other things that, you know, while I was putting together that series that I was also thinking about is that, you know, we've covered a lot of labor history on our show, like obviously including the series that we just finished. And as a Marxist show, and myself being very structuralist in my form of thinking, like we tend to focus on like the structural aspects, the organizations, the mass movements of workers, and the way that that moves history forward, rather than individuals, hoping to reveal the core aspects of any working class movement that, you know, folks can then replicate or modify or incorporate into their own organizing and apply to other struggles in other places and other times. You know, how we do historical materialism. And a big part of the like strong emphasis on that way of talking about history on our show is to try and do it as like a counterweight to the way that we're taught history in school, in capitalist mm-hmm. society, which tends to focus on pure great man theory, where it's like these heroic individuals stood out from the undifferentiated mass and pulled society forward through sheer will.
Right. You usually get a born date, a died date, a list of battles, and usually an elected office. And that's about the extent of the history lesson.
Well, yeah, there's that. And so now what we're doing is we are doing U.S. history book level analysis, right?
Well, no, right. No, we're going all the way through the dialectic of understanding that material conditions and all of the general material phenomenon that are going on at any given time are often quilted through one individual at any given point, but that individual themselves is not always necessarily the interesting bit. It's the events and the material around them that was influenced by their actions. It's like when DJ Shadow samples that guy and he says, it's like the music's coming through me. Right?
That's right.
Sure. That's one way of looking at it. But I mean, I bring up this all this stuff about historiography to say that it's like, you know, generally we are looking at labor history on this show in the history of movements, the history of millions rather than the history of individuals. But that's not to say that the role of the individual is not important. While, you know, again, like the full broad motion of history is driven by the broader class struggle, the movement of millions, especially during those revolutionary or pre-revolutionary crises, during heightened periods of struggle, those weeks when decades happen, as it were. During those periods, you know, the role of individual actors gets really, really heightened, you know, then we get famous big revolutionaries who emerge through struggle, like all
just
the ones we
Lenin.
Talk about on this
just
show.
Just say Lenin. Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, like Lenin, like Mao, like Thomas Sankara, like Ho Chi Minh, like Antonio Gramsci, like all these people. And so this is because, you know, like through these moments of struggle and through the long process of struggle, leadership is forged from working class organizers and the greatest figures of working class struggle for liberation emerge. And so one of those heroic figures in U.S. history is Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. She was a staunch fighter for the working and oppressed peoples of the world from her youngest days, and she became one of the most inspiring socialist organizers of the labor movement in the early 20th century, which is really that formative period for the labor movement in the U.S. And from her youth to her death at the age of 74, she never gave up fighting for the dream of a society run by and for the working class, even under incredible, merciless pressure from the United States government. Elizabeth Gurley Flynn stands as one of the most inspiring leaders and organizers in both the history of the U.S. labor movement and the fight for women's equality. And so, really, the more I learned about her, the more I felt like, we got to do a whole series on Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. We can't just do a couple anecdotes in another series. We really got to dig in. And so in this series, we're going to draw from two main sources. One, her own autobiography, The Rebel Girl, and also a biography of her called Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, Modern American Revolutionary by Laura Vapnick. And those will help us walk through the really incredible life of an organizer and revolutionary, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. And her life story of struggle and endurance is filled with tons of lessons and guidance that we can draw from today as we fight to rebuild the labor movement and finally end the reign of capitalist oppression and achieve the dream of that society that she fought for her whole life.
Hell yeah, I love starting out on this laudatory note. It really reminds me of the Hoffa series and how not laudatory that was. Eat your fucking heart out, Jimmy.
Yeah, this is the exact opposite trajectory. Yeah. Like, if you want to invert the Hoffa story in just about every way...
Yeah, it's the good news versus, you know, the constant bad news. You know, you're always like seeing all the bad news in the news feeds because that's, you know, just like, well, you got to know about it, but also it's what sells. But on top of that, but like, there's also a lot of good news, and this series is about the good news. Did you hear the good news, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn?
That's right.
Rose after 3 days.
That's right.
She pushed aside the stone and conquered New Hampshire, and she was born again.
Well, but let's just talk about the first time.
Right, that's correct. So Elizabeth Gurley Flynn was born for the first and I believe only time in 1890 in Concord, New Hampshire, to Irish parents from the Republican tradition. Her great-grandfathers participated in the failed Irish uprising of 1798 against the occupying British forces, and she came from a long line of fighters against oppression. Her grandfather Tom emigrated to the U.S. around 1840, seeking work and escape from the oppressive conditions back in Ireland, and ended up living in Maine, performing a variety of types of manual labor, basically acting as like a day laborer, alternating between cutting trees, digging granite, laying rails, basically taking whatever work he could find. And much like we see immigrant workers forced to do today. I mean, so, you know, in the 1840, it was the Irish. Today we see largely Latin and Central American workers being mm-hmm. forced to take, you know, the lowest paying jobs with the least protections due to, you know, racism, xenophobia, nationalism, et cetera. And just generally the desire of the capitalist to have the most exploitable workforce possible.
Yeah, there always needs to be a lowest rung on the workforce, basically, yeah.
And so Tom Flynn found the work so hard, the lack of education and social services in the area so bad, and the discrimination against the Irish in North America so intolerable that after a few years, he was moved to assist some fellow Irish immigrants in a quixotic plan to overthrow the Canadian government.
Cool, man. You know, I could tell from you calling it quixotic, or however you're supposed to say that word, that it was that it did not work. But still, cool. Very cool.
What does that word mean?
It means reminiscent of Don Quixote.
Okay.
Tilting at windmills.
I've only ever read that, and I assume because it's from Don Quixote.
Well, here's the thing is that I think this is a great discussion to have because it is pronounced Don Quixote, but when weird Anglophone scholars use the word quixotic, they say quixotic, which to me might just be disrespectful of Spanish. That's my guess, is that the academics just don't care. So fuck them. You can say quixotic if you want.
Well, so anyway, this quixotic plan, which I will explain what that word means as a part of this, as a, again, it comes from Don Quixote, who was tilting at windmills. Basically, this was a ludicrous plan that never had any chance to succeed. It was ambitious, far, far beyond its capabilities.
So, like, not even just adventurism, but pure silliness.
Yeah, it's like when something is quixotic, it's like foolish in the highest degree, but also like kind of noble if you're like willing to take their premises on
faith. Well, it's mostly what it is that it's that if you told somebody the plan, they would be like, really?
That will not work. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But yeah, that plan also did not work and led to several of those members being imprisoned.
Shit.
Not Tom, though. He just didn't end up overthrowing the Canadian government. But what it does underline, though, you know, along with her you know, older ancestors who had participated in that late 18th century uprising against British colonialism, Elizabeth came from a family of rebels and principled fighters for justice. Mm-hmm. The Flynns did not just accept injustice as a fact of life that they had to put up with, but stood up and fought to change it, even when time and time again they were beaten down by the state. Elizabeth's mother, Annie Gurley, emigrated to the U.S. from Ireland in 1877 and worked for years as a seamstress to support her brothers and sisters as the eldest child of the family. Annie and her brothers joined the Knights of Labor in the 1880s, and she was a longtime supporter of Sinn Féin, the Irish Nationalist Party. Annie was a staunch advocate of women's rights and attended speeches by Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony in New Hampshire. She insisted on women doctors to deliver her children and named Elizabeth after one of them.
That's a real, like, respect of workers to be like, you know what? You're such a good doctor. I'm going to name my child after you, the doctor.
Yeah, it's like, I could name this baby after my aunt, but my aunt didn't deliver the baby.
Exactly.
Also, just like, especially considering the state of, like, medicine and, like, chauvinism in medicine at this time, this was probably just a smart decision medically.
Yeah, just one of those heuristic things where you look back on like religious prohibitions against eating certain types of meat, and you're like, that was probably just a smart health and safety standard at one point. Because, I mean, yeah, especially with the doctors, it's like, do you really want some like late 1800s doctor who's been chain smoking cigarettes and washing his hands with acetone all day delivering your baby?
Yeah, exactly. So, and Elizabeth's sister Kathy became a teacher, her sister Bina became an actress, and her brother Tom became an optician. So a wide and ambitious range of talents in the Flynn family.
Optician, that's like, what is an optician? Like, not an optometrist, or is it like the same thing?
Opticians deal with the lenses, is my understanding. It's So you would be doing lens grinding, which is actually pretty difficult and somewhat dangerous work. I think Spinoza, it's thought that his death was hastened by all of the inhaling of crystal and glass from being a lens grinder.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
It's very skilled. Sometimes dangerous work. Mm-hmm. And so Elizabeth's father, Thomas Flynn, I guess Tom Jr., he was born in the U.S., you know, after his father had settled in Maine there in 1840. And her father, Tom, also started out working as a laborer, even as a child, just to help support their family because of the poverty that the Flynn family lived in. And he lost the sight in one eye as a child from a chip of granite while working in a stone quarry while he was a boy, scarring him with what, you know, Bill Haywood would later refer to as the marks of capital for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He too joined the Knights of Labor, a bit earlier in 1875. And later he sought to escape the difficult, dangerous work of manual labor, went to college, and became a civil engineer. He hated the discrimination faced by Irish workers and was suspended from school while studying for refusing to rat on his Catholic friends for secretly attending Catholic services, which were strictly banned at the Protestant institution he was studying at.
I mean, wow. It really goes to show you that, like, if you go back far enough, this kind of discrimination can really take any fucking form. I mean, I've heard Protestants talk shit on Catholics in my lifetime, but it's never been with the level of vitriol where they would actually, like, exclude you from an institution.
Well, I thought that you were going to go in a different direction with that, and that, like, oh, wow, as the times have gone on, being cool is still as easy as not ratting on people.
Oh, yeah, well, that's just a constant since the dawn of time.
You can wear an Easter lily for the men who fought and died. You can wear an Easter lily for the women by their side. You can wear an Easter lily for the heroes of 16 who gave us back our dignity and pride and self-esteem. You can wear an Easter lily for the women of the fight, Webley Winnie and Liz Farrell and the Countess Tall and Bright. You can wear an Easter lily for the patriots of the past, although they failed, the inspiration left by them would last. You can wear an Easter lily for the men who fought and died. You can wear an Easter lily for the women by their side. You can wear an Easter lily for the heroes of 16 who gave us back our dignity and pride and self-esteem. You can wear an Easter lily to rekindle Fenian faith and remember our great heroes of the year of 98. You can wear an Easter lily for the Fenian men so brave who died upon the scaffold for the countrymen to save. You can wear an Easter lily for the men who signed their name, for that mighty proclamation ended England's rule of shame. Horry, Pierce, James, Connolly, Thomas, Clark and Eamon Kent, McDermott and McDonough, it's from God that they were sent. You can wear an Easter lily for the men who fought and died. You can wear an Easter lily for the women by their side. You can wear an Easter lily for the heroes of 16 who gave us back our dignity and pride and self-esteem. You can wear an Easter lily the freeboards that have flown, Francis Hughes, Bobby Sands and Sean Self and Gary Owen. You can wear an Easter lily for the volunteers with pride, for Ned Daly and O'Halloran, John Huston and McBride. You can wear an Easter lily for the heroes of our time, Thomas Ashe, Michael Gunn and Mike Sweeney and Devine. You can wear an Easter lily for the future of our land, to see it reunited free from England's silent hand. You can wear an Easter lily for the men who fought and died. You can wear an Easter lily for the women by their side. You can wear an Easter lily for the heroes of 16 who gave us back our dignity and pride and self-esteem. For the saintly hordes who died in the years of great hunger, Trevelyan genocide. You can wear an Easter lily for the children's starving tears and the mothers who watched helplessly in action by their peers. You can wear an Easter lily for the scaffold and the jails and folks who fled in terror and in desperation sailed. You can wear an Easter lily for the exiles that have flown and let them know that Ireland will always be their home. You can wear an Easter lily for the men who fought and died. You can wear an Easter lily for the women by their side. You can wear an Easter lily for the heroes of 16 who gave us back our dignity and pride and self-esteem. You can wear an Easter lily for the men who fought and died. You can wear an Easter lily for the women by their side. You can wear an Easter lily for the heroes of 16 who gave us back our dignity and pride and self-esteem.